we sort of need to be effective as possible while we got the time, while we sort of have the room to operate the way we do. Now, part of that is, you know, online, but then there's also flyers and things like that. What I would say is that, you know, Twitter, you know, as good as it is, there's only a very small percentage of the population on it.
That's right.
And, you know, we can feel like we're winning sometimes because we're dominating Twitter, right? And we're objectively dominating Twitter, even though we're always getting banned. And look, I know we shit on Elon, right? But when I'm talking to like these leftists, you know, dunking on them in the comments, you know, I'll say shit like, you know, we fucking own this site. We run this shit now.
Based.
You know what I mean? So we can sort of feel like we're dominating, we're running shit on Twitter, but there's only a small population on Twitter. So we do need to infiltrate the mainstream as well. And when I mean mainstream, I mean, you know, getting on, you know, the six o'clock news as well. And we sort of seen that in Australia the last few weeks. We've had guys, you know, pro-white protesting, you know, counter-protesting, you know, these Jeets who want to stay in Australia, and they're sort of getting all over the news. So I just think, look, you've got the social media side, and then you've got, you know, the mainstream media side. And then, you know, obviously there's Facebook, there's all these other platforms. We need to dominate all of them. And,
as well as our local scene, right? Like we've also got to be involved locally in state politics, not necessarily politics, but we need to be present and be able to provide the pressure that comes with that presence locally. Right.
Look, there's a place for suit and tie nationalists. I'm not sure in Australia we're quite at that point yet. You know, actually, though, it's funny. I wasn't even aware, but Joel was telling me a few days ago, he brought it to my attention last week, that we actually had a straight up and down white nationalist elected to one of our state parliaments a couple of years ago. And I didn't even know that. And this guy, he's got like 50 followers on Twitter. You know what I mean? Like, fuck. Imagine if I was elected to some sort of parliament as a white nationalist. Nobody would fucking hear the end of it. But we need to do better at promoting ourselves and do better at promoting our guys when they get into these like positions as well.
100%. 100%. A lot of our guys just check out, right? Like, they don't want anything to do with this anymore. They were already abused online, or that, you know, they don't see any use in, you know, in this sort of, they maybe see this as an echo chamber as well. Like you mentioned, the vast majority of people in the world are not on Twitter, but they're not unreachable. They're out there in the world. Flyering campaigns hit some of those people. Newscasts hit some of those people. It is important to kind of be in the news and just so that people are aware, you know, that you're out there and that maybe they have some values or views that align with yours, you know?
Well, that's right. And look, the other point that I try and make when I'm hosting spaces, especially, is to say to people, look, you know, it's all good that we're all here and we all, you know, we're all on the same page and we all, you know, more or less agree on the key points, but we need to take this IRL, and IRL can be as simple, you know, it doesn't have to mean you have to go and do what HT does and you know, counter protest or throw Romans in public. It can mean that you just, you know, influencing people in your own circle and just taking some of the talking points that you learn from Twitter spaces or, you know, people in these spaces and just take that to, you know, to your own little circle of people that you talk to. If that makes sense. I mean, all of this helps because we're going to need, look, we don't need to wake up everyone. This is something that we have to remember. We don't have to wake up everyone. We don't even have to wake up a majority. We need to wake up enough people where we're going to be a force to be reckoned with. That's all we have to do. And I really think we're on track. Look, white people have kind of been subverted a little bit by the Jewish media, the same in ways that no other race has, to not see ourselves as a group, whereas in-group bias is pushed on every single other race.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. We've been completely deracinated while they've all been assisted along with agency and representation.
That's right. I mean, look, you see, like, you know, things like Black Girl Magic and all this sort of stuff. It's like really leaning into the race and making them see each other as tribe. And at the same time, it's doing the opposite for us. And I mean, you can see this in voting patterns. Obviously, the black people will vote between 85% and 90% for the Democrats just because they think they're going to get more Gibbs out of them, I guess. Whereas white people are going to be, you know, even though they sort of lean Republican, it's a lot more of an even split. And I don't say this because I think voting matters. I just say this as sort of an indication of where people's political leanings are. I mean, in the dichotomy of America, in the dichotomy of American politics, you know, anyone who sort of thinks that they're, you know, anyone sort of right-leaning will vote Republican, anyone left-leaning will vote Democrat. So it just sort of gives an idea of where people's, you know, heads are at politically. So, and then even like Asians will vote 70% Democrat. Jews obviously vote 75% Democrat. So all these races, all these other races are sort of voting as blocks, but not even voting as blocks. They're acting as blocks. They're nepotistic.
That's right. They're not even voting. They're voting on self-interest. Yes.
That's right. And it's, and I mean, voting is good as an indicator. But they're doing this in real life as well. Like they're Browns are hiring Brown. Do you know what I mean? Browns are renting their houses to Browns. They're quite open about this. You know, there'll be, you know, you see these things out of Canada and even here in Australia, they'll have these, you know, ads, you know, room for rent, Indian only. You know what I mean? Like, why you'd want an Indian in your fucking house? Yeah. I don't know, but still.
HT's really good at this. We're playing by the rules while everybody else cheats, and we're losing, thinking that we're winning by playing by the rules. You know, it's a it's crazy to see the gate crashers all run through the gate while the white guy stops to pay for a ticket. You know, as a good example, I think he showed that yesterday.
Yeah, that's right. And if you're the one white guy that doesn't pay for the ticket, you're the one that's going to get chased down and arrested. I mean, we have to look, there's too many of us. Even in America, white people are still a majority. You harness that energy, you start collectivizing, you start seeing each other as tribe the same way other races do. That's an unstoppable political force. Now, do I think there's necessarily a political solution? Probably not. I'm not going to elaborate too much on a recorded space. But just the way things are going to go, it's only going to work for us if we start, you know, having this same in-group bias. But even sort of at a local level, right, hire white. Don't think that, you know, you have some obligation. Look, I'll be honest with you, okay? You don't have to be fucking racist to hire white people, right? The white people are the best anyway. If you hire the best person for the job, you're going to be hiring white anyway. This is why they need DEI, right? DEI is essentially an admission that Browns are fucking shit at everything.
Yep, that meritocracy is unfair to them, yes.
Yeah. And look, I don't want to like be one of these fags that are like Democrats are the real racists, because if Democrats were the real racists, then I'd fucking, you know, be shilling for Democrats all day on Twitter. We just need to sort of manifest this this in-group bias for white people the same way the Browns do. And I think that's really important. Everyone can sort of do that to some sort of extent. Just prefer your own people. You know, you don't even have to be nice to Browns. Just make them feel uncomfortable. Make the invaders feel uncomfortable. Make them know Make them know that they're not welcome. Make them feel unwelcome. Make them feel uncomfortable. Look, there's, you know, I'll see Indians at the shops, you know, lined up for the checkout at the supermarket, and I'll like bump into them on purpose. And, you know, they're all like, you know, jeets, like 5'2" manlets. You know, I'll like bump into them on purpose, like pretend I didn't see them and just like shoulder them on purpose. And then they'll like look up at me and I'll just like look down at them in disgust, and I'll make them like, they'll apologize to me. Oh, sorry, sorry. Like, you know, and I'll just fucking just look at them in disgust. Just make them feel like shit. Joel was telling me the other day, he was walking around with the boys and he just dropped a shoulder into one of them. And they're just so tiny, they just go flying. But I disavow violence, disavow violence, obviously, disavow. But just an example of, you know, what some people were saying.
What is a good illustration that we don't have to be polite. We don't have to say, excuse me. We don't have to say thank you. We don't have to treat people equally. Even if the law does, which it doesn't, of course, you're not equal in the eyes of the law. We should apply the same bias and the same prejudice, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, a lot of people are under the assumption that you have to work, you kind of have to work with hatred to do these things. But this is not really rooted in hatred, right? Like some of it is, and there is some legitimate, rational, righteous anger, rage, and hatred out there. But really, this is all comes from a concern for our own kind, our own people, and a love for our own race and nation. I think that as long as we're working with that as a fundamental, then all of the other things that do come naturally whenever your race is threatened, whenever your homeland is threatened, whenever you are discriminated against, particularly in a place where you grew up, you know, that the rage and anger that comes from that is useful, but you have to be kind of... You have to act from a pro-white place, right? You're not going to be successful if you just hate nons, right? You need to have a pro-white wrapping, or at least I would say even a pro-white foundation underneath that.
Yeah, look, absolutely. Everything should be rooted in love for your own race. Look, if you don't mind, just while we're on this, I'd like to read the I'm sure everyone's familiar with the 88 precepts.
Please.
There's precept 27. You know, is really pertinent to this discussion, and I'll just read it for everybody because it's essentially what you were saying. So it is not constructive to hate those of other races or even those of mixed races, but a separation must be maintained for the survival of one's own race. One must, however, hate with a pure and perfect hatred those of one's own race who commit treason against one's own kind and against the nations of one's own kind. One must hate with a perfect hatred all those peoples or practices which destroy one's people, one's culture, or the racial exclusiveness of one's territorial imperative. So, I mean, look, I like the I like the 88 precepts. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes, though, I think, you know, when you're like, you know, doing like an essay at school and you like, right-click the words on the thesaurus to try and make yourself sound smarter. Sometimes I like get that vibe from the 88 precepts. Not going to lie, but in essence, I really do like them, and I think that one's important because it's not even about, you know, hatred of, you know, another race. It's about hatred of things that are trying to destroy your own race because you love your race. And I think if the way we act is rooted in love for our race and wanting to perpetuate our own race, I think that's how we're going to win.
I agree. I think a lot of people see the rhetoric around some of this as nonsensical, but actually that's some of the most common sense there should be, right? Is a hatred for the things that would threaten that which you love. I mean, Rockwell said it very well. David Lane did a fantastic job of, you know, of kind of putting this all into words, but ultimately this is natural law that we're talking about. So any man that's honest enough with himself, if kind of left with himself and has enough time, should come up with something pretty similar to these same observations. Like this is just a distillation of what we can observably experience, right? And we will get defeated if we don't have an in-group preference, and we will suffer, you know, terrible violence if we continue to mix. And we've seen the effects of race mixing and degeneracy, and, you know, we're seeing all this in real time. very difficult to step out of it, be objective and write something like that when you're not, you know, when you're in the middle of it all the time. So
it's a great resource. There's actually, it's easy to find the 88 precepts, but it's a great resource. It's great to refer to. I think everybody should look. I'm not going to lie. I do my best. I can't memorize it off by heart. There's a few key ones that I do memorize. I can't memorize it off by heart, but I have read through it a few times. I try and memorize it as best I can. But it is a great resource. But that one in particular was sort of pertinent to the discussion we were having.
Yeah.
And look, I mean, hatred in and of itself, look, maybe I'm not as radical, you know, as some of the guys, but I don't hate black people in Africa. You know what I mean? I don't hate Arabs in you know, Saudi Arabia. I don't hate Asians in Asia. You know what I mean? I think everyone should sort of have their own little corner of the world where they were sort of put.
Sure.
And the cultures in all these different places, you know, some are going to be better than others. Some are going to be shitholes. But we should all have our own little cultures that sort of exist in perpetuity rather than the whole world becoming like this brown 90 IQ mixed mud race that's just a slave race to the Jew that's smart enough to, you know, complete basic tasks but not smart enough to ever rise up.
That's right. I think hate gets used. It's overused, of course. It's a catch-all word for essentially anything that a certain group of people don't like. So it loses its effect on me. I'm sure that it has on most of us. When people say the word hate, we don't cringe, we don't blink, and we'll just lean into it in a lot of cases. I think that's important too, to devalue their words actively, right? And to do it as often as possible. Not only to normalize our language, but we have to win the war of language. We have to win the war of culture. It's not just a war of demographics. Like, it really is a culture war, and I think a lot of people don't really realize how important white culture is in fighting this invasion.
It absolutely is a culture war. The culture war, look, I'll tell you how I know we're winning. I know we're winning because there was some half nigger mixed breed rapper called Lil Pump on the timeline a few months ago asking what a Pajit is. Now, what that tells me is that we're at the point where brown rappers, to stay relevant, they have to follow and find out what the online Nazis are doing, and have to speak the language of online Nazis. We're driving the culture now. There's nothing cooler and more edgy than you can do than to be a fucking racist, a white racist online now. And look, we see this the way Gypsy Crusaders and HT's clips go viral, like the OME clips and shit like that. They literally get millions of views. People love it. It's the coolest thing you can do, and it's right at the cutting edge of the culture. So we're winning the culture war, but we have to keep it up because even though we're winning, we're also the side that's under attack. And look, Elon says that he's free speech. We know that he's not. We established that early in the show, but beyond that, most of the accounts, or a lot of the big accounts that he interacts with, are like confirmed run by Jews, like Libs of TikTok, for example, like Gunther Eagleman, for example. You know, all these big, you know, quote unquote right wing accounts, they're run by Jews, they're kosher conservatives, it's all theater, it's all Zionist. There's one or two accounts that he interacts with that aren't. There's one account he interacts with. And he's one of our guys. I don't think you'd probably want me to shill on this platform, so I won't.
Right on.
But he does interact with one of the accounts that's one of our guys, and he's all the way there. And I, I talk to him. But I mean, this is an example of how we're reaching the, we're really reaching the top, and it's really starting to cut through. You know, it's funny when you think about it, you know, from the level we're at, it's starting to, it's filters up rather than filters down. Like big accounts, you know, they'll be copying our memes and they'll be using our language to try and get impressions rather than the other way around. You know what I mean? They're not, you know, we're the ones driving the culture. Make no mistake. All these big accounts, they're followers, not leaders. We're the ones driving it. We're moving the culture. We're shifting the Overton window. We're kicking in the door of normalizing racism. And it's fucking awesome to see.
That's a very interesting take. The worm has turned quite a bit. And you're right. Things do seem to filter up now. Who had that on their bingo card, right? Interesting that a small fellow now can make a viral post, and actually that will show up in news, potentially national media. I've even had my name printed recently in some national media, and I thought that wasn't even possible. Like, that would never happen. But we're seeing things that we thought were impossible happen all the time. So to me, it seems like the kids are pretty based. They don't like the degeneracy. They don't like being forced to get into gender politics and things like that. They seem that they're going to be the natural rebels that may bring about some of the leadership that we're looking for. Do you think that that's where our hope lies in the upcoming generation? Or do you think that our leaders are here now and we just haven't quite, you know, found them, or maybe they haven't just quite stepped up into their own yet?
I think there's a few guys that are pretty close, you know, from say Gen X. But I think our guy is probably, you know, a child today. You know, our guy is probably Gen Z. He's probably laughing at HT's clips right now as we speak.
Yep.
That's right. He's probably going to be the savior of the white race. I mean, these kids, these Gen Z kids, they've been brought up by these libtard, cucked Gen X parents, you know, and the most rebellious, edgy thing you can do as a big fuck you to your parents is to be a racist. And they've just seen how, you know, objectively, you can just see how, you know, gay and stupid everything is. And they're growing up in a world where they're never going to be able to afford a house if things don't change. They can't walk down the street safely because of these muds running around. So, you know, they're not stupid. One thing I will say about Gen Z, though, is that, you know, the next Karl Marx is probably Gen Z as well, because I think each generation is just getting more and more polarized. So, you know, like we were talking about earlier.
Interesting to think about. Very interesting to think about.
Yeah, I mean, look, something like, and I know it's, you know, they're Jewish numbers, and I know the education system, you know, probably, you know, pushes this, but, you know, there was something that came out, you know, 20% of Gen Z kids identify as some sort of LGBTQ, and I'm sure most of them will grow out of that. But I think it just sort of highlights, yeah, Gen Z are the ones, you know, watching, you know, HT's clips and laughing their ass off, and Gypsy Crusaders clips and laughing their ass off, and being racist as fuck online and making frog accounts and ratioing Jews online. But they're also the ones that are, you know, identifying as LGBT and sort of pushing the other side as well. So I think they're going to be a very, divided generation. And I think that's just sort of a symptom of where we're at as a culture, and where we are at as, you know, Western countries in general.
I think that's brilliant. And I got to thank you. I've only got a few minutes left, and I want to wrap this up because I don't want to take up too much of your time, but you've taken some time out of your day to hang out with us to share some ideas. And I found this to be a brilliant conversation. I do appreciate humble fellows that are, you know, that are well-spoken, and they're not too boisterous. It really, I think it takes the conversation further, And I'd like to thank you for coming on the show. Do you do anything other than, I mean, do you do a podcast or anything? Is there somewhere that people can catch you other than Spaces and you know, kind of get more insights or thoughts?
Yeah, look, not yet, because it was kind of new to me, and it wasn't really something that I planned to do. I don't really know the ins and outs of streaming or anything like that. But I was, before I got banned on my last account, I was gonna, you know, HT was always hitting me up saying you need to stream. And he was gonna give me a stream key and all this sort of thing on GTV. And I was gonna take him up on that. And then I got banned, and then, you know, shit started to get kind of weird. But so I'm gonna try and, you know, rebuild my little following. And then I'll, get back into it. And that's something that I might do in the future. You know, just to sort of broaden the reach a little bit. To your point though, I'm sort of in a dangerous position. If this is all I got, I need to sort of go somewhere else. Otherwise, you know, this could go at any moment. They could just take away my account like they do. Yeah, you've got to rebuild, and it takes, you know, like I'm doing pretty well, but still it takes a long time to rebuild. It's good to be somewhere else on a platform like GTV that's, you know, not kiked out, obviously. That's definitely something that I want to look into.
I hope that you do. We need more voices, right? We have to kind of displace the media. I don't think we can do any of these things if we don't take a chunk of attention away from the mainstream media, and I think we have a pretty good chunk started, but we need to steamroll that and snowball that as well. And so it's going to eventually become a battle for the attention of the masses, and they seem to be losing a lot of attention while we do seem to be gaining a lot. So I don't think I'd go so far as to say that we're winning yet. I think we are a pretty small group inside a small group, inside kind of a contained environment, but like you said, it only takes a few of these ideas to get out there and catch fire. We saw this happen 100 years ago in Europe, and I think we're due for another one.
It's going to snowball, man. They're losing control already. But no, that doesn't mean we get complacent. That doesn't mean we rest.
We have double down, right?
Otherwise, it's going to go nowhere. Just before we wrap up, I just want to sort of make a request to everybody on GTV and here. You know, look, I know voting's gay. I know Trump and Kamala are both zogged out. I know it doesn't matter who wins. But if Trump wins, can we just take one day where we just enjoy the liberal libtard meltdown on the fucking timeline without blackpilling about how he's zogged out? Can we just have one day before we do that? Is that fair, Flood? Do you think that's fair?
I would be down to decree one celebration day. Just for the enjoyment of liberal tears.
Not even to celebrate Trump. Yes. Not even to celebrate Trump. Just to celebrate all the liberal tears, and just to wallow in it, and just to be happy that they're sad.
And to see the kvetching is also very entertaining. I love when they get scared and they start self-victimizing, and who knows all the fun things that could happen. I'm for enjoying the moment, no doubt about that.
Yeah, look, the next day, fine, we can talk about how he's, you know, a Jewish shill, and we can get back to, you know, doing what we do, but just for one day, let's just enjoy all the liberal tears on the timeline, please.
Guys, there you have it. Comfy Friend recommends liberal tears for what ails you, and keep an eye out on this guy. He's a fast-climbing fellow, very well-spoken, very good leader in these spaces, and when you see him in these spaces, when you see him in your timeline, boost him. Boost our guys. Get people to follow him. Tell your friends, hey, this guy's one to follow. The power of networking, you know, is in all of us. All of us sharing everything that's good, right?
Thanks, Flood. Look, everybody in my space here, make sure you follow Flood. He does a great stream. I used to, I still do, but when I was really into the spaces, I would always have Flood stream on in the background while I was sort of getting pumped up for some, you know, for a big night of racism.
So, big white pill. Thank you, man. I love when people appreciate the work that we're doing. And you won't be sad if you do follow. And I encourage everybody, catch the link in the description. Give Comfy a follow. And keep boosting our guys.
Oh, yes, I can. Can you hear me?
All right, there we are. It sounds like we got a pretty good connection, man. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, brother.
I'm going to put your face up here so that people can see who's talking. We're up here talking to Dark Thomas with the dark picture. What's going on, brother? How have you been? It's great to have you back. Welcome.
Thank you, brother. I'm doing good. I've been really busy on a lot of different things. I will say that I updated the GTV Flyers website. I added the Black Savages Kill White Children. So if you scroll all the way down to the bottom, if you're on your phone or your computer, you can click it and you can download the zip file. So any of the paper boys out there, you can go ahead and download that file and print it out. The pack will be in color, so you'll have to put your settings on your printer for grayscale. So I did that. We've been adding some sources, some videos and articles underneath all of those as well. So we're trying to expand upon the old site. I have some other things going on, but I don't really want to talk about some things going on because I can't.
Right. Yeah. I know that you have to be careful with what you're working on sometimes. OPSEC is a big deal, especially right now. There's a lot of shady shit going on.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, I'm always helping with GTV, HT, and Ned, all those guys. Anytime they need help, I'm there for them. Maybe after Trump gets in office, I should hit the ground running, and then I could be like, hey, guys, this is what I've been working on for the past, you know, couple months. So we'll see when we get there.
Comfy says hello to you, Woody, from Kim over in Twitter chat. And you guys are welcome to jump into the space. I'll go ahead and get links out to the chat if they want to. You can't get a mic. I mean, unless Thomas decides he wants to let you up. But that's, you know, this is going to be a listen space.
I think we'll let people up, like, after 11. I cleared my morning out for this show.
Okay. We'll copy this link. We'll pop this in these chats. And I'm glad that you brought up the flyer. So I know that you can't talk about everything that you're working on. And obviously, don't answer anything you don't want to. But I've noticed that the flyer site is looking, number one, it's looking fantastic. I mean, it's nice and tight. These things are in full color. When you look here, you're just immediately hit with, like, all this information. Have you been looking at this information and kind of, like, sourcing and kind of clarifying it? Are you, like, fact-checking this stuff? Or is it something that's just more, like, formatting and making it look better?
So I don't want to say I am. Well, I am, because I'm fooling with the site. So I'm going through the names. I'm looking up articles. I'm fact checking it myself. But there's actually a whole team of people on the back end that are fact checking and sourcing. So there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. Yeah, tons of stuff going on behind the scenes. So, however, whenever I'm adding new flyers or I'm adjusting adding new content to the bottom of the flyer. Once you click a flyer, it brings you to another page, right? So if you scroll down to the bottom of that page, you'll see new additions are being added underneath those flyers. So as I'm doing that, I'm reading the flyers. I've read them many times before, but I'm putting in names. So if you go to the flyer, the Jews Suck Baby Dig flyer, okay? I actually provided tons of sources for that. From the health department, I think from the CDC, from the New York Health Department. I put a video in there, I put articles in there. You know, there's even an article in there where a child was killed by herpes, contracting herpes from.
This is awesome. Yes, sources, and you've got the sources in here with the health reports.
Correct.
This is beautiful.
So, but that's just the beginning. That's going to keep expanding. You know, those sources will expand, the videos. It'll grow from here. So,
actually linked source videos too, as well as articles. This is so awesome. So you're even going to take the debunking work out of the flyers for people. If they want to come debunk the stuff, you're actually giving them your sources, articles, and everything, making it very easy, right? Have you found
Correct.
Any of these Yeah. to be debunkable? Have you tried to debunk any yourself?
Of course I have, and I haven't really been able to debunk them. So, and that's the thing. So a lot of people, they'll come look at the flyers, they'll read them, be like, ah, you know, this is cool information, but they don't want to do the next leg, which is researching, because it's time, and people don't like to spend their time searching for the truth unless they're on that mission. Right. So,
yes.
The idea came about that we should provide source material, you know, under this, that way if people are at the website, you know, the people in the street that have the printed off flyer, they're not going to get the source material. They're just going to see the propaganda.
Right.
But if you're on the site and, you know, in your communication with GTV, you know about GTV, you're going to run into these sources. And we want to provide those for you because, you know, sometimes people are just a little too lazy. It's just, and we want to make sure that everybody's well informed on, you know, where this material is coming from.
Yeah. It's critical. I've always thought that they needed sources. I wasn't sure. I mean, you know, back in the day, GTV Flyers has kind of always been under, sort of under construction. It's always been under improvement. I got to give Handsome Truth a lot of credit on that. Despite, you know, the ups and downs, IRL kind of going in and coming out, going to jail and getting out. Like, they've always made a very concerted effort to keep this site not only online, but clean, you know, so that people can get their flyers, people can download it. They all look good. They grab people's attention. These things make the news. They control the media. And it's fantastic to have sources available on the flyer. So if you got some uppity Jew, maybe you're on Omegle, maybe you're doing a stream, and some Jew wants to try to check you, you can go right with them to gtvflyers.com and start checking out the sources. This really, really is a powerful tool to have at your disposal. It's how important is it that all this stuff is 100% correct?
What, all the source material 100% correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's very important, just in general, right? How important is it that we're right about the things we say? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to send somebody to your flyers and you provide this propaganda. Of course, propaganda, you need it, but you want your propaganda to be accurate. You don't want it to be, you know, slanderous and untrue, because the moment you start providing false information, you're giving someone that small window to doubt everything else that you say.
That's right. That's right. And the credibility of the whole movement, in fact, can sometimes hinge on just one person's propaganda or one group's flyers, can it? Like, I've certainly seen that happen.
Well, it can. And part of the reason why, you know, the GTV guys have had a lot of success with these flyers is because they are accurate, you know, and it's something you can go out and you can stand behind.
I noticed they never call him a liar, do they? They call him hate speech. They call them hate litter. I've heard them called hate litter. I think that's so funny. But they never call them untrue, right? They never call them lies.
Exactly. They'll call you every name in the book, but they won't tell you you're a liar.
That is pretty awesome. Man, this site just looks good. It just looks good all the way around. Big shout out to Ned. Shout out to all the guys that are working on this stuff. And all the guys that are working on the sourcing. And, like, man, some of these flyers just look so much better than they did before. They've all gotten, like, a major overhaul, huh?
Yeah, and so the bottom seven flyers are actually new. You can't click on them yet because I haven't added the functionality. Because I'm trying to go through some of the old flyers and implement the new functions, and I haven't gotten to the new flyers. But I need to go through, and I need to add it to where people can download those flyers and the paper boys can go ahead and start flying them. So I might pause what I'm doing and go ahead and fix those flyers at the bottom to where the paper boys can go ahead and do some work.
Right on. That's cool that you're keeping the paper boys up and running too. You know, keep that in mind, right? That the paper boys doing their thing out there. This is really impressive stuff.
The paper boys are the ones spreading a lot of the propaganda all across the nation, all across the world. You know, big shout out to those guys. Everyone that goes out there and pushes our propaganda, man. Thank you.
They don't really get enough credit. I mean, I've seen these flyers everywhere. I've seen these flyers in the hands of Candace Owens. I've seen Stu Peters flopping these flyers around. We've all seen Alex Jones fumbling through a stack of these flyers. Harrison Smith. Like, these flyers are mainstreaming the noticing. Are they not? I don't think that's too big of a statement.
They are. But if you notice, when they mainstream them, they cut off the GTV logo at the bottom. So they don't want to give the GDL any credit.
Yeah, I've noticed that a lot. A lot of times they do. They try to not show the bottom. I think it's always funny when we catch them showing the bottom, you know, and we zoom in on it and blow the horns, because it's, you know, that's a dub. It's a huge victory. Like, these things are becoming a cultural icon, and I don't think people even notice it yet, but they are everywhere you see. Noticing, you see GTV flyers. It's pretty based.
Yeah, and I mean, besides the gatekeepers, and you know, the nationalist gatekeepers of America, I think it's more successful whenever the news picks it up and the news actually flashes that logo at the bottom, because, you know, you're hitting normie land. The people that listen to Alex Jones and Stu and all these other guys, like, they're a little bit woke up, you know, they're not fully asleep, but the people on the other side of that cable TV box, they're sleeping. And, yeah, you know, when this flashes on their screen, they're like, oh shit, let me go to that website and see what it's actually about.
See, this is game changing. Yep, this is game changing. This is publicly distributed, widely available, non-centralized. Even though this all comes from one place right now, you can find these flyers in flyer packs, in boxes of flyers that are being shipped all over. You can find these being printed at your local office building, anywhere there's a white person that still has a job left, you know? Like, it's funny, but these flyers are a decentralized resistance. And they are publicly available, and more people by the tens of thousands are learning every day where to get them and what's on them.
That's correct. So that's one thing I do behind the scenes, is trying to expand the sourcing information functionality. I still kind of, I want to add a library, so I just need approval from, you know, the big guy.
Right.
I want to put, if they'll allow, to put a library of links of a bunch of good books for new people to read after they've, you know, gone through the Red Pill section. Because I just am of the opinion that once somebody watches the documentaries, if they're hooked, they're just craving for more information. And the next thing that they want is they want some books to read.
I agree.
Want somebody to talk to.
Yeah, so, that's a big one too. Like, find me a friend right now, please. And yeah, books are huge. Books are huge. I love the idea of putting a library in here too.
That's right. So, yeah, that's pretty much all I want to talk about. Besides that, I mean, I've been studying for some licensing. You know, in the world against the Zog, licensing is very important. You have to have proper license, or, you know, they'll try and cross you up for certain things.
Yes.
I've been reading through a bunch of different laws to see how certain things can be implemented. I've been in touch with some people, some younger guys that kind of go into some politics stuff. I've been picking some people's brain.
Right on.
Stuff like that as well. But other than that, you know, I'm just doing my daily routines.
That's good, man. I like life. You got to maintain a normal life. At the same time, you probably have a little bit of a double life when you're not working on your normal thing or with your family. You know, we're always kind of working on this constant struggle. So tell me, has the election affected you at all? Have you been involved in any fun political discourse lately? It's kind of funny. I was thinking maybe after the election, we might enjoy a couple days of just, you know, libtards crying and all this shit. But it hasn't been as sweet as it was to me in 2016 this time around. What have you had a similar experience?
Yeah, it's I don't know. I really don't have any feelings towards it, because I know Trump's not our guy. I think for me, the funnest part has been, bless you, has been watching at least the far lefters just melt down. I think that's the best part for me. But
yeah, it is kind of funny watching. So all these people that hate whites, all these anti-whites, have been brazenly just TikToking and TVing away how much they hate white people, how much they hate Donald Trump. They've lumped us all together. You know, we're all racist, terrorist, white supremacists. But it's funny now, they're not so brave now, are they? Like, they were really, really brave for the last 4 years. But now they all seem to be really, really scared. I don't really think that that's really something they, you know, like, Trump's never actually put anyone in jail except January 6 people. So,
right.
You know, I'm not expecting him to do anything, but it does seem like there is some genuine fear on the other side. I guess that's been a little bit delicious.
Well, you know, Trump has his enemies too. There's a lot of people in politics that don't like each other and that really attack each other for the power struggle. So I think the second time around, Trump will actually go after some people that, you know, came after him. I think he's going to...
I hope so.
Do that. But, you know, I want people to understand that that doesn't mean Trump's our guy. You know, I saw a big uptick in people, you know, celebrating that, you know, we weren't going further left through the Marxist ideology. But people really need to remember that the Republican Party has been slowly moving further and further left every single election. And now they've gone further left than ever before because they've included transgender Caitlyn from the fucking Kardashian family.
Disgusting.
And then, you know, they're celebrating buttfuckers.
Yep.
You know, this is something that the right never did. So to even consider the Republican Party right wing is just insane.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, like, what are those Marxist leftists thinking while they're watching gays and trans people dance around, you know, the Republican Party and the church and Trump, and just like, it's, they must feel like they've won a hell of a victory, you know, seeing how far the right has slid to the left.
Yes, Trump is closer to their ideology than any of us.
Man, that's kind of scary to think about. So, have you, I mean, I guess it's normal to indulge in a little bit of fantasy. You know, the Q thing was a big thing at the end of his first administration. A lot of people thought that Trump was very silently anti-Zionist, and very silently he was working with our guys, and he couldn't talk about the Jews because they were, you know, they were the big thing you couldn't mention. And so are we going to have to go back to dealing with that fucking lunatic shit?
I think we're already dealing with it. I woke up this morning to, I saw Alex Jones did something on the Federal Reserve.
Fuck.
So the thing about it is, people have to understand that the gatekeepers are going to use our talking points and broadcast our ideology to the world. That way they can control it. They can control the flow. That's how a gatekeeper works. You give the same information and you control the flow of the ideology. You don't let it get too radical, but you give people enough information to give them, I guess, some kind of comfort. So I woke up this morning. First thing I see is Alex Jones talking about how the Federal Reserve was created in the early 1900s. And, you know, the president can't fire him. The only people that can, you know, get rid of the Federal Reserve is Congress. And then, you know, they're talking about getting Ron Paul involved, which with Musk and Trump, which, I mean, they might be talking about a central digital currency to abolish the Federal Reserve. So, okay, we're going to abolish the Federal Reserve and move into digital currency.
Yeah.
So, but the thing about it is, Alex Jones is married to Jews. And, he, you know, so the people that are gatekeeping the American narrative are connected to the Jews as well.
That's right. So did we just go back in time 4 years? I mean, I hate to use that term because a lot of people actually are romantically, you know, fantasizing about turning the clock back. And I think we all know that that's not going to happen. We've got a different time, a different Trump, a different media. We've got a different everything. I don't see Trump going after his Jew friends. You know, of course, it would be nice if he really was the Q that they... You know, the guy that was going to go after the deep state. Maybe we will see some of that. I hate to be optimistic. Is there anything that in you that like makes you tamp down any optimism immediately and shoot it? You know, anytime you start to feel like something good might happen, I'm really learning to really stop myself when that happens. Have you had similar experiences?
So what tamps down my optimism is knowledge and knowing.
History. Yeah.
Well, history.
Yeah.
But being firm and solid in your beliefs will always tamp down the optimism, because you will notice that they will say the wrong things. And, you know, it's really interesting. I also read an article this morning. I love to read and, you know, scour the internet. So said that, you know, this was a return to 1980s Reagan era.
Oh, no.
Oh, for no. Like the Republican Party. And for any of the Republican tards out there, Reagan was anti-white, by the way.
A lot of people don't know about Reagan. You know, he's been retconned, right? Like, he's been retconned through history. I remember the 80s were pretty shit. The 80s were crappy, right? There was affirmative action. You know, rap music came out of the Reagan administration. He was a California liberal, and he damn sure didn't give a shit about white people, in my opinion.
Well, Reagan took control of the Republican Party the same way that, you know, Trump has taken over the Republican Party.
And so basically, Jewish donors, let's see, he set up a vice president that took us into war and signed into law Noahide laws.
Yeah.
Like Reagan was kind of just to set Bush up, it seemed like to me, you know, and looking backwards.
And so not only that, but in 1986, he signed the Simpson-Mosley Act, and it made basically every unlawful invader in America a citizen.
Wow. So every citizen is technically an invader. Are we under continuity of government and we don't even know it? Like, I know that Oliver North kind of started to put that together before FEMA. You know, I've heard theories, and of course this kind of all gets into QTARD level shit. But, you know, the whole USA is a corporation and it's been governed by a board of directors. We've all kind of heard this kind of stuff. But there is no actual USA country anymore, is there? I'm talking to one of the biggest patriots that I know, actually an American from an American family that loves America. And I did too. But like, I think it's gone. What do you think?
I don't know. I like to hold on hope, you know, because it's tied to my complete history for the last 400 years. And I don't want to let that go. You know, I want to fight until the death for that history. Because, you know, I feel like I'm obligated to. You know, if I didn't, I'd feel like my ancestors just died for nothing.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can only imagine. Do you see... this is all, it's so weird to get into conversation like 2 days after, you know, what an apparent electoral victory, but I don't think anybody really has very much more optimism in Trump. It's kind of weird to talk about the country in terms of patriotism and nationalism when really he's the most likely to hunt us all down and throw us in jail. Do you think that, have you heard about this Operation Esther? Have you heard about I guess call them pro-Jewish NGOs, have put together plans to tamper down anti-Semitism online. Of course, Twitter is a big target. But we're seeing money start to flow into these operations where, you know, it seems like they're trying to splinter apart white nationalist groups. I think we're kind of seeing some of that on some of these platforms, not so much with the drama, but with some of the like demonetization moves that have been made recently. Our channel got demonetized a couple of days ago on Odyssey. This is allegedly a free speech platform, but HT has been telling people for a good long time that this platform is eventually going to shut us down. I think White Rabbit's been saying the same thing. Do you see that sort of thing coming, or do you think that we're going to be able to maintain our foothold in social media?
No, I do. I see it coming. I see that people need to network outside of these platforms now and start preparing for the future. any time that they give you, you know, they give you so much freedom, freedom of choice, you know, it's almost like an entrapment. So, you know, a lot of people don't know that when you tweet something, it's saved into a database, and most likely saved into two databases. One is a more long term and one is a short term. So when you go back and you delete these posts, it removes it from one of the databases. So that's how your posts show up on your feed. It's all data stored. So, you know, you have these people that have 20, 30,000 tweets. And if they don't ever go back and delete these tweets, well, there's a paper trail. But, you know, a court could subpoena to find out your information, data that you've spread online. So you give someone all this room to free speech to speak their mind. And, you know, a lot of people fall into a trap a lot of times. You know, they think they're hiding their name, they think they're hiding their birthday, but you know, these people, they have all your information already on the back end. Whether you're hiding behind a profile picture, you don't share your real name online.
It's silly, yes. The idea that you're going to hide from the government is absolutely absurd. They already have everything. Everything.
It's a joke.
Yeah.
It's a joke. I mean, your cell phone is tracked by GPS. If you don't know how to spoof GPS and all this stuff, like, you're not hiding from anything. Even if your GPS is off, you can be triangulated from cell phone towers. There's so many things that people just need to understand and don't understand about tracking technology. I mean, that's how they caught all the people at January 6th. I mean, they didn't catch everybody, but people at January 6th were geolocated within a certain triangulation, and then that's how they found people.
Oh yeah,
it doesn't matter if your face was on camera or not; they knew you're there.
I was building these systems back when they were 2G, and they've always had to have GPS and exact location, just so that the phone will work. Like the stations that send the signals need GPS timing in order to cancel delay and hand phones off. So it's not just technology. It's been around, and it's been in phones since the 80s, you know what I mean? And it's been absolutely, you know, locating you. The only thing that's changed over the years is the accuracy, and where they used to be able to target you down to, you know, 20 or 30 feet, now they can get you down to 2 or 3 feet, you know?
Yeah, correct.
And so, and now they got your temperature, your heart rate, and all the other things that your phone can measure at the same time. Smartphone.
Yep. So, you know, your average person is not going to know what they should do to avoid certain things, but and people fall into traps that way. And the same way with January 6th, it was just a big trap. It was a nationalist trap. And if you look at Trump, he's not a nationalist. He is a populist. He's pushing populist ideas to entrap the nationalist American into his camp, because we don't have a better option.
It's a very good delineation between nationalists and populists.
Correct. And, you know, I'm not a populist guy. I am a nationalist guy. So I'm not gonna run along with the populist party. I mean, that's the reason why I left the Republican Party in the first place. You know, I don't support homosexuality. I don't support transgenderism. The Republican Party does, because they need those votes. It's populism. A nationalist candidate would have said, I don't give a fuck if you're gay. I don't give a fuck if you're transgender. You are mentally unstable.
Let's go. Yeah. Now, I'm ready for that hardline kind of shit. I want fascism back. I want you to not be able to say bad things about my country if it hurts the country. I want you to not be able to say bad things about my people if it hurts my people. And I don't care if they want to codify that into law, or if you just get a good beating for doing it socially. You know what I mean? I prefer the social method, honestly. I think people should be able to keep, you know, common law common by being the fucking law enforcement. So if somebody robs your neighbor, then the whole neighborhood gets to go hunt those fuckers down. That's the way I'd like to have it, kind of Old West style. What about you?
Well, yeah, I mean, America needs to be run with an iron fist again. It has to be. And part of the reason we've gotten away from running our societies with an iron fist is because we've allowed all these different cultures to assimilate into ours, and they have adopted our culture. So now, in order to win a presidency, and you've allowed these motherfuckers to vote. Okay, you've allowed the women to vote, you've allowed the niggers to vote, you've allowed the chinks to vote, the fucking spics, everybody who is not a naturalized American citizen originally in the first place can now vote. So our candidates, no matter what party they're from,
it makes it
harder and harder for a nationalist to run, because now you have to pander to the American public and be a populist.
Yeah.
What nationalist is ever going to become a populist?
And if you're a white man, you're automatically a Nazi just to start out with, right? You start out with the Nazi banner. It's terrible.
Correct. And this is our fucking country.
I'm kind of liking the Nazi banner now. I mean, you know, if they're gonna call you a Nazi, guys, lean into it. In my opinion, I've always done that. Lean into it.
Yeah, I mean, I like the flags. You know, I like everything the NSDAP did. I love the Iron Eagle. I love the symbology. I mean, my wife went to work this morning with a dress, and on her chest it had like SS.
Base. Base.
It was a backwards S and then a correct S. And I was like, "Bae, your dress says SS. And she's like, "Yeah, SS. And I fucking threw a Roman salute.
It's like, isn't that cool? You're like, "Hell yeah, dude, Heil."
That's but funny. No, it was some, I don't know, some designer brand. I mean, you know, they couldn't put the regular SS or they would have been accused of being a Nazi company. So
you know they want to, too. You know they want to do Hugo Boss again. You know that they do.
Yeah.
They know that shit was hot.
So that was kind of funny, that thing that happened this morning. It was great. I love her to death. She's great. But
sounds awesome. Like, it's so nice to see an actual American couple with family and kids that with the right ideology, man. You know, it's kind of a rare thing. Sadly.
Right?
Yeah.
I know. And so back to what we were talking about. So, you know, in America, I don't know. I don't make the connection between, you know, what was happening in Germany and the symbolism they had in Germany versus the symbolism we have in America. So I think America has to have its own, you know, fascist symbolism, and not necessarily like the fasci logo. So I ran across a political party named the American Freedom Party.
Right.
So it seems to be a National Socialist Party. Now, the one thing that gets me is American freedom. So I don't know why you would name a National Socialism Party American freedom, because at a certain point, you have to restrict the freedoms of the fucking retards.
Of those non-Americans. Yeah.
So that was kind of redundant to me. But, you know, they got some decent guys involved in there, I guess. So I'm trying to reach out and talk to these guys more. But the symbolism that they use, it looks like they use like an Iron Eagle. And then the crest of the shield on the eagle's chest is actually the same shield that was from the original United States seal, the heraldry, from the concept drawing. And then the eagle is sitting on, you know, the fasci bundle of sticks. So with the axe.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like the symbolism, and you know, I've been working on my own symbolism behind the scenes. So, you know, America, we have a lot of similar symbolism to, you know, Rome. And so did Germany. Germany had the Iron Eagle. You know, Rome had the Aquila. If you look at all the empires that were connected through Rome, all the heraldry, they all have either the Aquila or the Eagle. Even Prussia did.
We see that everywhere. That's right.
Why the Eagle and, you know, even if you look at Tsar Nicholas' heraldry, it was the Aquila as well. It was the two-headed bird. So there's a connection between all of our nations in this symbolism. So I don't care if the swastika or the SS bolts and, you know, any of this other stuff like turns off the normie fag. I don't really care about it. I like the symbolism.
Right.
However, in America, I think it can kind of be redundant to use that same symbolism, even though we have the same ideology. America needs its own like brand of fascism.
You know? I agree 100%. I've seen a lot of people try to, I mean, they even use the term NSDAP, or they'll talk about National Socialism and bringing it and modernizing it. you know, I get that. I understand the idea they're coming from, but I kind of agree with you. It doesn't just need new symbols. Like, it needs to be a new ideology. It can be the cousin of National Socialism. It can, as long as it comes from an Aryan mind and it works for the Aryan people, they can call it whatever the fuck they want to. But I do think that just like the idea that you can just read Mein Kampf, copy the platform of Hitler, and, you know, you're good to go. I do think that that's a little bit silly. I think that it needs to be something that we come up with, right? It needs to be born of us.
Look, they gave us the blueprint. This was the blueprint for their country during their time. So you can't use the same blueprint from 100 years ago. You have to make some adjustments to that blueprint to fit what's going on today. You know, there's no way in America we're going to go from this fucking multicultural society to expelling people immediately. Like, the first thing that needs to happen is segregation needs to be reconstituted. Once everybody's segregated, then you keep going a step further and a step further and a step further. You can't go from, you know, here we are to an extreme.
Well, we have to get back. We have to get back where we're following natural law again. Like, we have to get away from this Jewish law, this Gentile law, and get back to natural law. And then I think from that will come like all of the systems and all of the needs and all of the visionaries that can meet those. But we have to be honest about it. Yeah, at least what the law is, right?
Correct. You do. Yep.
We're here with one of the biggest brains around. This is Thomas Woodman. He doesn't really take credit for being a big brain, but he's a pretty big brain guy. And we always have a fun time talking to him. You guys are welcome to ask any questions from the audience. I'll try to keep an eye out for any. Or jump into the space, and maybe Thomas will give you a mic later if you want one. What time is it? I got to do a quick time check. 6:40, that's 9:40 on the East Coast. It's Big Brain Friday. So, have you missed spaces at all? Like, I know that you've been kind of away from the 1488 space a while. Do you have space withdrawals?
Not really.
Not really. Nope.
Yeah, there's people that message me that say that they miss me speaking. So, from time to time, I've tried to set some time aside outside of my life to go in there and say hey, or hold like a tiny space for an hour or two to kind of, you know, let people chat with me, because, you know, I miss open conversation with my brothers and sisters, and, you know, some of them miss having me as well. And, you know, last night 1488 was having some problems, and I was around just in time. You know, I went ahead and just took the co-host for a little while, gave those boys some help real quick so they can sort out some technical difficulties. And then I moved on with my life. So right. I'm not like completely out of the loop, but I just have a lot going on. I can't dedicate so much time to doing spaces anymore. So I don't really miss it. I do miss the folk.
Right on. I know exactly what you mean, man. Sometimes you can get burned out. You don't have time for certain things. And this can be a lot. This stuff can be a lot of work. I think a lot of people probably aren't familiar with that. So it's good that you keep things in balance. You know, it's good that you keep things in balance. You have to set an example, not just to the people, right, but but to your own family. And so I think you're doing a fine job of it. Always make sure that people miss you. And always make sure that people want you back. It's not too hard to manage. Sometimes.